Hello and welcome to Line One, your health connection. I'm your guest host, Hannah Floor. Kids are outdoors less these days. They spend more time on screens. Schools have shorter recesses. And it's less common for kids to spend hours playing outdoors, roaming their neighborhoods. Culturally, we're more concerned about safety and prioritize scheduled activities. That's true even in Alaska, where there is more access to outdoors than most places in the U.S. But lots of studies show that being outside is great for kids. Today on the show, we'll explore why this is and what three organizations in Alaska are doing to increase outdoor time through after-school programs, camps, and outdoor-oriented schools. Today with me on the show, we have Adam Mulcahy. He's the principal of Stream Academy here in Anchorage, and that's an outdoor-oriented charter middle school. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Thank you.
We also have Kayana Till Rodriguez. She is the co-founder of Kajuk Vena, Alaska. That's a culture camp at Lake Clark, and she's a graduate of the Alaska Pacific University's Outdoor Studies Program.
Thank you.
And on the phone, Katie Holmland is joining us from Petersburg in Southeast Alaska, and she is the co-founder of Kinderskog and other outdoor youth programs there.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. And full disclosure, I have personal connections with two of our guests. My daughter went to Kinderskog for years when we lived in Petersburg. And I didn't realize this, Adam, when I booked you, but you're working with my roommate, Simon Rose, to start Oceans Academy. And that is kind of a high school version of Stream Academy with an outdoor-focused, project-based charter school.
Yes, we're opening. Our charter was approved by ASD, and we're opening fall 27.
Okay. Well, thank you all for being here. I'm excited to talk about this. So I talked a little bit about you at the top, but I'd love for each of you to briefly describe your program. Adam, do you want to start?
Sure. Stream Academy is a charter school here in ASD. We opened our doors 10 years ago. This will be our 11th year. We're middle school, and we're focused on project-based learning, place-based outdoor experiential education, and integrating STEM across the curriculum. And then we find those three things go hand in hand, go really well together, and work well for middle school students who need a different experience than the regular schools.
And can you tell me what that actually looks like? Like, give me a basic kind of classic day at Stream Academy.
Yeah, so in some ways it looks like a regular middle school. Students come to school, we have a regular school building now, they go to classes, they take math and science and social studies. We also integrate subjects across the curriculum, so we try not to teach things in isolation. We talk about, you know, if you look at math and science and language arts as things being in boxes in traditional schools, we burn our boxes. And so our teachers work together in their grade level teams to really, really integrate those subjects in a real world, hands-on, applicable type of way. And that's what project-based learning is. And that leads right into place-based outdoor experiential, because a large part of that is being out in our community and being outdoors and, you know, being, you know, members of Anchorage and, you know, citizens of Alaska.
Okay, thank you. And then Katie, can you talk a little bit about Kinderskog and the other programs that you have there in Petersburg?
Sure. Kinderskog began in 2018. So I still feel like we're kind of a new program, but deeply rooted in our community here. It's an outdoor program. We're almost exclusively outdoors with our kids year round, which presents some interesting environmental challenges at times, living in a rainforest and having winter opportunities, but it's all youth-led exploration, focusing on building their confidence, their resiliency, their connection to community and nature, and those collaborative skills to just hopefully grow into really good humans and know that they are wildly capable. And we have a huge focus on mental health and social emotional skills as well. And from Kinderskog, we're now under the Petersburg Medical Center. We're a wellness program here, and it just kind of continues to grow. So in addition to the Kinderskog program, we also have what we call ORCA camps, which are outdoor recreation, creation, and adventure camps, which are more topic specific. So for example, this week I'm hosting a paddle camp, which are just day camps to learn kayaking and cold water skills. We also have a theater camp that will be doing a production on Friday. So we have a bunch of different ORCA camps that are going on as well, generally tailored towards slightly older kids, We also have a forest kindergarten program for our younger explorers, making sure that they're connecting with nature and community as well, and taking advantage of natural learning opportunities. So overall, we're serving kids ages 4 through 18 in our programs. Just keeping them outside and moving and participating in healthy recreation activities and healthy risk-taking opportunities as well.
Great. And we'll talk more about those, the role of risk in outdoor activities later on in the show. Kiana, can you talk a little bit about your culture camp?
Yeah. So Kijikmena Alaska is a nonprofit organization in Lake Clark, and we host an annual camp called Kuktazun, and it's a culture camp that kind of unites the Western and Indigenous ways of being outdoors, connecting science and traditional ecological knowledge. We have kids 8 to 18, and then young adults who've been in the camp before have an opportunity to come back and be youth mentors. And it's amazing to see the kids blossom every year, getting out of the village to their traditional lands, and just being able to mingle with kids from other tribes too. It's amazing.
Yeah. I want to know a little bit about why the three of you were interested in the role of the outdoors with kids. How did you come to create these programs? And was there something before doing this work that really made you feel like this was a necessary thing for children? How did you come to this work, and why? Kiana, do you want to start?
Yeah. Well, at APU, I got to study a lot about the health effects nature has on human beings in general. And my three favorite authors was Richard Zluv, Last Child in the Woods, mm-hmm. Talks about the nature deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. And then Rachel and Stefan Kaplan's attention restoration theory, and also E.O. Wilson's hypothesis on biophilia. Yeah.
Can you, Adam, you're nodding.
Yeah, well, Richard Zluv is definitely an influence on me as well. And we consider it one of the founding texts of Stream Academy.
Can you recap it for, I have had that book sitting on my shelf for at least a decade and I have not yet read it. Can you recap it for me and anyone else who is unfamiliar?
Yeah, just essentially talks about how we have continuously gotten further away from nature as a society, and just the importance of having that connection with nature, with the outdoors, with, you know, the woods and trees and rivers and mountains, and how healthy that is and how important that is for children to grow up the way I grew up, in the woods, mm-hmm. you know, and being outdoors and finding that, you know, we talk a lot about sense of place at Stream. You know, a lot of our children all live in Anchorage, yet we find they don't have a sense of place. And so we really try to help develop that sense of place in the outdoors. Once you have a sense of place in the outdoors, you have a place that grounds you and connects you with nature. You also find responsibility in that place and stewardship of that place. And it builds a level of reciprocity, of caring about your community in a way that I think is really important for our city and for our society and for our state.
Mm, yeah. Katie, what inspired you to co-found Kinderskog?
I think, well, there's a lot of reasons for Kinderskog, other than just how extraordinary Alaska is, just as a learning environment, just being out in it. But I also think about a question that I often ask my staff, is like, what is your favorite childhood memory? And almost everybody will always say something related to the outdoors. You know, I had this great big log at my Boompa's bait shop on the Wisconsin River, and that is my favorite childhood memory because it was where we sold our mud pies. It was a rocket ship. It was a storefront. It was everything to us. And I felt like as I was preschool teaching here in Petersburg, that kids weren't having that same connection to place. And what I consider core childhood memories of baking mud pies, and wanting to create a space where kids could feel connection to nature, build confidence through those real world experiences, because that's where math and science is happening. That's where social studies is happening. That's where history is happening. And so making sure that they're building those connections and real world opportunities was really important. But like watching kids become more capable and curious and resilient and connected not only to themselves and their peer group, but that stewardship piece, just like Adam was talking about as well. Like they can't care for what they don't know, and they don't know what they don't get to experience. And so it's like this really beautiful, magical thing that we get to do here. And we have the privilege of being the facilitators of core childhood memories that these kids are going to remember forever. And it's like the biggest honor of my life. It's the coolest thing.
Did you have something to add, Adam?
No, just it's interesting that I am not super familiar with the other programs that are represented here, and yet the commonalities and the common threads that immediately emerge when you have people who recognize the importance of getting kids in the outdoors and the importance of, you know, the outdoors in the fiber and the fabric of Alaska and for us as Alaskans and all of the benefits. There's so many common threads here. So it's just it just makes me smile.
Mm, yeah. And Kiana, you are working with kids who, you were telling me before the show, are living a sort of more subsistence lifestyle a lot of times. So I'm curious what your perspective is. You know, it sounds like maybe the kids that you have at your culture camp do spend a little bit more time outdoors than a lot of kids typically do. Is that true?
I think so. It's becoming a little less with like Starlink and having more accessibility to fast internet. But I think the biggest thing I see is getting them out of the village and like into like a space that is like untapped almost. Like there's no houses, there's no people, like except your own little village you've created.
Mm.
So I think it really like it's not so isolating when you take them out of the take them on a boat ride. Like even the experience of getting to camp is so memorable. Then once you're at camp, just being in the elements and not being in a house or a cabin and having to use your skills that they've known for generations. So
right. So there's a difference between knowing the place they're in and then getting to explore something and having it be a little bit less about their daily lives and responsibility and a little bit more play.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the difference between structured and unstructured play. I know, Katie, with Kinderskog, there's a lot of unstructured play. Is that on purpose? Is that built into the program?
Yeah, very much so. Because we operate year-round, there's drastic difference between our summer program, which operates full days in the summer, and then our after-school program, where kids really do need and deserve unstructured time. And so unstructured play for us is youth-led, so they have voice and choice in where we go each day. We consider ourselves like a little transient program. Mentors walk down and pick kids up at school. We have a conversation each day. What activities would you like to do? Where would you like to go? And they have a whole bunch of favorite spots here on Mitkof Island. We walk everywhere we go. Sometimes we ski. Sometimes we kick sled there, which is super fun. But it's open-ended. Mentors work really hard to not take over their play. And so when we join them, we're following their rules that they've negotiated and created. And working on allowing them to build that independence and foster their imagination, which also benefits their executive functioning and their creativity as well, on top of all of those social skills. So unstructured play is huge for us. We do balance that out with some structured activities as well, especially in our Orca camps, because that's also an important part. There's got to be balance to this. They have to learn how to follow rules and honor expectations as well. So there is a balance to it. But especially during that school year when they've been in a traditional classroom all day long, being told exactly what they are and are not allowed to do, when we can give them that space and freedom to just be kids, it's what they need at the end of their day.
Adam, how do you think about structured and unstructured play in the classroom or the outdoor classroom?
That's a great question. We are a public school, and so we have constraints. We have necessary structures, and yet what STREAM tries to do is you know, we do dangerous things safely. I talk a lot with our staff. One of my favorite sayings is flexibility on the other side of structure. So flexibility in and of itself, if you just give flexibility, it can be challenging in public education to just say we're going to give total flexibility because we have constraints and we have things we have to do and things that we have to accomplish. So flexibility on the other side of structure means if we have the parameters in place, if we have good structures in place, and a lot of that for us is safety and front loading and really clear expectations, really clear guidelines on what that looks like in the outdoors, what that looks like in teamwork and project-based learning, what that looks like when we cut kids loose to work on projects, that really empowers kids in a safe way. And really lets us to do the things we want to do and let kids do the things we want to do. So I think it's we probably have less unstructured outdoor time and unstructured play, although we do build in some of it. We have breaks, scheduled regular breaks outdoors. It's recess, but because it's middle school, we don't call it recess anymore. We call it break time.
You're right.
So we backdoor that. So the unstructured piece is really important. But for me, it comes after we have set really clear structures and pre-taught and prepared, and we have really good guidelines and guideposts in place. And then we can cut kids loose and let them explore and let them do things.
Mm-hmm. And I want to paint a picture for folks a little bit more in terms of what that outdoors time when you are learning, when it is more structured, looks like. Are you saying, go take an hour and write a poem about something you see in the woods? Are you, like, is it a science project? What is sort of the scope of that outdoor learning that you're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So again, we front load and prep all that. It usually looks fairly guided and tied to science standards or the other standards that, you know, kids need to learn and that we're teaching. And so we will pre-teach the information and the lessons, and then students are outdoors following up with that. A lot of times it because we integrate STEM across the curriculum and we integrate all subjects into our projects, a lot of time what it looks like is the application piece of project-based learning. So I observed a sixth grade lesson with one of our amazing teachers, Matt Wattendorf. He's just like the quintessential outdoors STREAM teacher. And he had sixth graders, they're just coming out of elementary and not used to any of this. He had them all out in Russian Jack Park, plotting out their own plots in teams, and then counting the number of spruce trees and birch trees in those plots. And then we returned to the classroom, and they extrapolated that data, and they made projections on how many spruce trees total and how many birch trees total are in Russian Jack Park, and they're charting and graphing that information, and they're doing the math to come to those conclusions. So they had me guess, and I was about 1-0 off. I think there might be 10,000 trees, and a sixth grader raised his hand, and it's like, Mr. Mokelke, there's probably more like 100,000 trees. So just that practical application. Mm-hmm. Our eighth grade, one of our eighth grade projects is the fire project, and so they're learning again the science skills and standards, and they're integrating other subjects. But then they're out at the MLK burn area where we had that pretty significant fire a few years ago in Anchorage. And they take soil samples of burn areas and the areas that weren't burned, and they're measuring pH levels, and they're measuring plant growth, and they're studying the impact. We run into moose out there. I was with them last year or the year before and ran into a couple of moose. And so they're really studying the impact on our environment, and really applying those science standards.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it is time for us to take a break. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection, and my name is Hannah Flohr. After the break, we'll continue our conversation about the ways that being outdoors affects children. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection. I am your host, Hannah Flohr, and today on the show, we're talking about the ways that spending time in nature affects children. We have three guests. Kayana Till Rodriguez is co-founder of Kajuk Vena. Katie Holmland is co-founder of Kinderskog and other outdoor youth programs in Southeast Alaska, and Adam McCulkey is principal of Stream Academy here in Anchorage. And that is a middle school that prioritizes outdoor learning, project-based learning. And before the break, we talked about some of the ways being outdoors really benefits kids. I want to get into some specifics. Adam, I'm curious how being outdoors helps kids learn and whether there are, there are studies that show that there are specific kids who really benefit from this kind of learning. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think all children benefit from outdoor learning and from just from being in the outdoors, of course. What our founders were teachers at Baggage Middle School and amazing educators. And so they wrote the charter and then hired me to open the program. What they found here in Anchorage is that when they were trying to do these things within the constraints of regular public ed to get kids outdoors, to take them biking in the park, what they repeatedly heard was, we've never been in the woods. We've never been in the park. We've never been hiking. And it's sad. And it really is eye-opening that so many urban Alaskans don't have outdoor opportunities and don't have outdoor experiences. And so we're the only charter that I know of that builds in a neighborhood preference. And we give preference in the lottery to the two East Anchorage zip codes so that those more traditionally underserved students have access to a unique program and have access to that outdoor learning. So I would say, all students benefit. I wouldn't parse that out, but definitely those students have less opportunities, tend to be in, more low income areas of our city. And so we really want to give them those opportunities to get outdoors and develop sense of place. And then sort of secondarily to that, I say Stream Academy, I opened the school that I needed when I was 12. I needed to, and I grew up outdoors and doing things hands-on and being in the woods. And so by nature, we attract a lot of students and their parents of, children with ADHD, which is me. it tends to be more boys because those signs are more outward. Girls also have ADHD. It manifests a little differently. And so we serve a lot of students with ADHD, and what I find is exactly what I needed, which is if you get those students outside, if you give them frequent breaks, if you give them unstructured play, all the way up to the other end of that spectrum where, we get them out doing hands-on science, math, and application of their learning, those students do so much better. They thrive. As human beings, why are we in boxes all the time? Why do we do education in these concrete boxes? And why do we sit in them and stare at screens? It's not what we were designed or meant to do. We're meant to be outdoors. We have evolved to be outdoors, and it's essential to our health and well-being. And so it benefits all kids, but it definitely benefits kids who struggle more with traditional education and just with those opportunities.
Kayana, you've been nodding.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking about the kids I work with. A lot of them, if you have too much structure, the ADHD effects really mm-hmm. kick in. And most of them are very hands-on experiential learners. So that type of learning really makes an impact. And also at the camps, there's a huge impact when you have multi-generational teachings happening, bring in the elders mm-hmm. and some more of that unstructured time comes in, and a lot of learning is done just around the campfire talking.
Hmm. And it strikes me that maybe that's learning that you as camp facilitators weren't planning on specifically. You assumed that maybe there would be learning happening, but you didn't know what the learning was going to be. And that's part of the idea.
Yeah, I think part of it's just letting everyone be present in the moment and letting everybody's hearts and minds open up to the moment.
Hmm.
And a lot comes out from that, especially from kids.
Yeah. Do they surprise you?
They very much surprise me. They'll come in so closed and shut off, and especially if you're new and you give them that space to open up and feel safe, and it's amazing how much they transform in 5 days.
5 days.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Wow. Katie, something I've heard you talk about is the way that you work with folks in the schools. You know, you during the school year, you're an after school program, and I've heard you talk about being in contact with teachers and maybe somebody who struggles a little bit at school, making specific efforts to help that kid blow off steam or find an outlet in Kinderskog afterward. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have a great working relationship with our school district. A disclaimer, I'm also the vice president of the school board, so that helps that relationship quite a bit. But our teachers are fabulous. So the parents and guardians who give us consent to communicate with their child's classroom teacher, we definitely do that. And we have several kids in our program that have behavioral needs or sensory needs. And the really cool thing about being out in nature is it meets the kids where they're at. It's like the most adaptable, flexible environment for them to be in. And so rather than having constant restrictions, we kind of have this why not attitude towards a lot of things. So if the kids are asking to build a fort, our first reaction is, yeah, why not? Let's talk through this. And then those kids that really do need to be moving their bodies in different ways, we're able to help support what they're learning in school through that movement, balancing on logs, climbing trees, throwing rocks into the water, just navigating uneven terrain, does support what they're learning at school because it's strengthening those same systems that support attention and planning and coordination and confidence, those executive functioning pieces that our kids with ADHD do at times struggle to develop. So I like to think we're really great partners with the school district. They're really great partners with us. And I think a lot of the teachers do value the work that we're doing in different ways. And they do frequently come to us for advice as well. But kids deserve to move and have sensory rich experiences. And that's just going to promote and enhance what they're learning at school as well.
All right. We've got a couple emails here. Somebody's writing in who says that they are a licensed clinical social worker. Their wife has a doctorate of occupational therapy, and they're talking about how clear it is that play is essential for growth and development. He writes, "We have also witnessed its healing power with mental health and trauma, both in the U.S. and abroad in displaced populations." Just wanted to note that. And then a question from someone. Somebody's wondering, Adam, maybe you know the answer to this, whether there are any projects in the greenhouse in Russian Jack for kids.
Yes and no. There's not a full-blown project by one of our grade level teams that I know of. And last year was our first year at Nunaka Valley. Unfortunately, with enrollment issues in the district, they've closed some programs. Not something that charters wanted to see happen, but when the opportunity arose to lease that building and keep it alive as a center of the community, we took that. And so, you know, it was our first year to being right on the doorstep of Russian Jack, new parks for us. And we visited the greenhouse and we're getting comfortable and getting used to Russian Jack being our new backyard. And so there are things in the future, but bringing up that greenhouse is great. I don't think a lot of people in Anchorage know about that greenhouse. It's like a veritable jungle in there. It is the most amazing, like greenhouse doesn't do it justice. So for those of you out there who like live in Anchorage, go check out the greenhouse at Russian Jack. We brought kids over there and it's awesome.
I have not been. I didn't even know it existed. So that's exciting. All right, Adam, you had mentioned risk. Katie mentioned risk. Kayona, I'm sure that you also think about risk as the founder of Culture Camp. I want to talk about what role risk plays. And Katie, you have this idea, you call it risky, not reckless play. I want to talk about the difference. What is risky versus reckless? And then why is it that you actually promote risky play?
Yeah, this is a big one. I get really excited about risky play because I think it's important for everyone. We all like to be a little risky sometimes. So it's a really important question, really important distinctions between the two. So risky play involves challenges where we recognize there is a potential for risk. We get to make decisions and we can develop skills to manage that risk, right? So At our program, that means that we have mentors who are trained, who are supportive. We consider the environment we're in for each kind of risky play activity. Sometimes the answer is no to things. Wrestling on a rocky beach is a terrible idea. Wrestling in the muskeg sounds a little better.
And just for folks who are not
risky.
Southeast, muskeg is basically like
a squishy bog.
It's a squishy bog. It's like wrestling on a mattress.
Yes, exactly. But reckless play would be the level of danger is exceeding what kids have the ability to do or mentors have the ability to manage. So perhaps there's not much understanding of the potential consequences of that, or there's no reasonable way to reduce the risk. Because our goal at program is never to eliminate all risk. Risk happens every single day. We need to give kids the opportunity to learn how to trust their intuition, manage and mitigate their own risk. And we can't do that if we take every risk away from them. So we want to preserve some opportunities for growth as well. So the easiest example for the difference between risky and reckless for me is it can be risky to ride your bike on a gravel trail. Yes, that's a fun activity. Where it would be reckless is if you didn't do your ABC bike check beforehand, if you're not wearing a helmet, and perhaps there's an aggressive bear in the area, right? Like that would all be that's far beyond what is reasonable. That takes riding your bike from a risky activity to a completely reckless one. Similar, if you're going out kayaking, that's a risky activity. It turns into a reckless activity if you're not wearing verified safety gear. So we have a lot of training that goes into how to support risky play at our program. It's a several hour training that I've put together for my staff because it is so important for our kids. It's very important for adults as well. And so the way we play and the way we engage in risky play is always present across our lifespan. It just kind of changes shape as we grow and develop. But I would rather have kids learning to manage their risk and assess their risk, trust their intuition in these lower stake kind of situations when they're 7 or 8 years old, rather than when they're 16, maybe out the road at a party where the stakes are higher. So.
And that's
kind of my big thing. It's like we're long gaming the kids the whole time.
Right. And that anticipated one of my questions, which is why is the risk important, right? Like why not just have unstructured play outdoors that isn't risky? Adam, do you want to answer that?
Well, risk is how you learn. You know, outdoor play and the playground is where we practice and learn and develop social skills. You learn what's okay and what's acceptable and what's not. And students work that out. Children work that out themselves. And it's how you become functional adults. And so I think we're losing a lot of that. I think kids growing up on screens and on online platforms don't have the consequences for their actions and don't have that same learning process that they do when they're outdoors and unsupervised and taking some risks and finding the consequences out for those risks. That's part of human development that I think is essential. Jonathan Haidt, his book, The Anxious Generation, is really an amazing read. And Jonathan Haidt says this thing that just hit me so hard, it just drove things home for me. He says, we are overprotecting our children in the real world, so to speak. I don't like that term, but in the real world. And we are vastly underprotecting our children online. So, you know, public education was sold this bill of goods about 20 years ago. I was a part of this. And like everyone else thought, oh, this is great. You know, like we need to put iPads and then Chromebooks in every child's hand. And it's just going to make them, you know, and there's no data that says an iPad in a kid's hand increases or impacts learning in a positive way. None that I've seen. No viable data. Yet we have seen after 20 years, this is our generation's cigarettes. It really is. It's the, oh, it's safe and it's healthy. And then like the data comes down the line and says, nah, actually it kills you. Technology is killing our kids. It's killing their ability to interact with the real world and with each other and to experience life and develop those skills. Jonathan Haidt lays out all the data on the detrimental effects, mental health of technology and of social media. And so, you know, I just, that part stuck with me. We're overprotecting them in the real world and underprotecting them online. And this isn't the show to get into the hazards of online, I know, but the real world piece, Like, let your kids play without looking over their shoulders. Let them, you know, let them, like she talked about, let them ride their bike down a gravel road. Let them explore the park and climb trees and let them fight with their friends down the street a little bit. Let them experience these things and work these things out and take these risks and learn, rather than sheltering them and trying to keep them from those experiences, which then, you know, and often results in more screen time, which is more dangerous. It's far more dangerous. You know, there's a myth that, you know, child predators are out there hunting kids in the streets with a van, right? Like, we were sold that in the 70s and 80s. You're going to get kidnapped. And, you know, in the instances, you know, I don't undersell how scary that is, but the instances of that happening are so rare. Yet child predators are stalking and, you know, getting at our children constantly online, constantly. And so, you know, we really need to flip our thinking in terms of risk and realize that the online world and the technology that we bought into, that we were sold by big companies, is our generation's cigarettes, and that our fears about children interacting in nature and with each other and in the real world are vastly overinflated. And so I really want to flip that risk idea.
Mm-hmm. And this is something I experienced as a parent of a kid in Kinderskog. My child came home. I don't remember how old kids have to be to start using pocket knives at Kinderskog, but she came home and she wanted to whittle, and I believe she was six. And I was like, are you serious? And then I bought her a pocket knife, and she had been taught so thoroughly how to use that knife safely that I was able to let her go out on the porch and whittle. You know, I kept an eye on her, but she knew all the rules. And so I want to hear a little bit. We're going to have to take a break very soon, but I want to hear a little bit, Katie, about what role rules play in risky play. You know, I know there's also the tree climbing rule where you only climb to double your height and you have to have a plan to get down and you're not allowed to wear a backpack and nobody else can be in the tree. But sometimes as a parent, you look up and you're like, my goodness, my child is very high in that tree, even if it's double their height.
I have to admit, the twice your height is a totally random thing that I just blame on the insurance company. We do have some really interesting rules for programs. So the expectation of our program is that we're going to have a safe environment. We're going to look after one another. We're going to be respectful to one another and to the environment that we're in and to nature. But we have very specific rules for how we can keep things risky and not reckless. We have a whole staff training on this as well, on all of the different kinds of specialized activities that kids participate in. I have risk assessment and management plans written for about 45 different activities that all get reviewed by my risk assessment planning team for outdoor recreation, my Raptors. And it's like a diverse group committee of different professionals that review all of our ramps and say, yeah, this is great, or hey, have you considered these other ideas to keep things as safe as necessary, never as safe as possible? And so we do have really interesting rules, but we try really hard to keep them, utilize consistent language. And so, like, for the pocket knives, for example, we always have three questions. What are you planning to make? We're not gonna just sharpen sticks to make sharpened sticks. What's your plan for keeping yourself and others safe? Which should include something like, well, I'm going to sit over here. I'm going to stay on the picnic blanket. If anyone comes by, I'll remind them that I'm using my knife and I'll set it down until they've passed by. And then our other question is, what are you going to do if you get stuck? Because we want kids thinking about the potential that this isn't going to go the way they want it to go. And here they have an implement of doom in their hands. And so we want them to be already thinking of, if this isn't going the way I want it to go, I need a plan for regulating myself, which will involve setting that knife down first, rather than getting frustrated and doing something that turns into a reckless activity. And so mentors ask those three questions every single time they use a knife. So the kids just hear it over and over and over again, which is great. It helps keep programs safer. And then we have other rules. If you're in the water at your knee, you're in a PFD. It doesn't matter where we are. That's the rule. That goes for mentors as well. Doesn't take much water to create a disaster. It helps that the rule rhymes. Kids remember it. We also have kids who have been in program for so long that they know our rules, and we teach the group that safety is a group project. If someone reminds you of a rule, hey, you're at your knee, you need to be in a PFD, your reaction should be, oh my gosh, thank you for that reminder. Thank you for holding me accountable. Thank you for helping to keep me safe. Rather than this kind of defensive, like, nuh-uh, or I'm fine, I don't need that. But there's that like accountability piece to it, because safety is a group project, takes all of us. So that's kind of how we're setting up this environment for learning and keeping expectations and rules as consistent and clear as possible and not wavering from them.
Okay. And we need to take a second break. I want to hear a little bit more about the difference between warning kids about risk and danger and coaching them, which you got into a little bit there. And then I want to talk about how you've seen kids change when we come back. But you are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. Stay with us. Welcome back to Line One. I'm your host, Hannah Floor. And today on the show, we're talking about the ways that spending time in nature affects kids. We have three guests: Kayana Till Rodriguez, co-founder of Kajuk Vena; Katie Holmand, co-founder of Kinderskog and other outdoor youth programs; and Adam McCulkey, principal of Stream Academy here in Anchorage. And we were talking before the break about risk and having a plan and gauging that risk and recklessness. I want to talk a little bit about the difference between warning and coaching. I know that myself as a parent, many parents, you see a kid in a tree, you see a kid, you know, fill in the blank, standing on top of a large rock, and it's really hard not to say, be careful, which I understand does very little. What do you mean when you say coaching, not warning, Katie?
So part of our risk philosophy at Kinderskog and the other youth programs is that we want youth to be active partners in the risk management process. So that involves taking the time when you can. There are certain times where you have to just be like, hey, get out of the road, there's a car coming. But when we have the time, engaging in those conversations about risk, weighing different choices, and allowing them the opportunity to practice their critical thinking skills, kids are actually really smart. They're wildly capable. Let them think through things and also develop that skill of planning ahead. Okay, you want to go muskeg jumping. Do you have a change of clothes? Do you have plans tonight where you're going to have to be sure you have time to even shower all the mud off of you? Like thinking through those choices beforehand rather than just jumping without thinking about the consequences. So we really do have a shared approach. Participants learn to embrace different healthy challenges. They take responsibility for their own decisions, and that helps them grow their confidence. And so we try really hard to reframe our own worries. I like to say it's like the pretending you have glue in your pockets. Like, respond rather than react. Like, you don't have to rush over super quickly all of the time, whether that's physically or with your words. And rather than like the, oh my gosh, be careful, which is like a gut reaction that people have sometimes, just like pause for a minute, give it 6 seconds, give it 11 seconds. Like, what are you actually worried about? We don't need to always be projecting our fears onto kids. And so instead, maybe you'll say, hey, how does your body feel up there? And like give them that opportunity to check in with their own selves. And then you can coach them from there. If their body is feeling really nervous, or maybe you see them physically shaking, and you can point that out to them in a way that's really supportive and helps them think of their next step. I really love the question, have you done this activity before? Tell me about that experience. Because sometimes they're like, nope, never rock climbed before. It's like, okay, well, let's like backpedal a little bit here. Let's talk about what might happen and how we're going to mitigate some of those unexpected or unintended consequences. When climbing trees, it's always like, hey, do you have a plan for coming back down? Like, let's hear it. Questions like, is there a different way you could maybe do this? Rather than just saying no. I really hate just saying no to kids. But maybe there's a different way we can engage in that activity or still meet those sensory needs, but trying really hard to have them take that ownership over it. mm-hmm. is really important.
Okay. Kiana, you were talking about seeing kids change in just the 5 days there at camp. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about that. What changes do you see? Can you talk about a little bit about that?
The biggest thing I see is the growth in confidence and a sense of feeling empowered, like especially when they learn a new skill, that they can go home and teach other kids or their family, and just the confidence to share, to speak up, and then also the kids that maybe speak up a little more, their ability to become more aware of themselves and giving the chance for kids that maybe are a little more shy to talk. So those are the biggest transformations I've seen.
It really strikes me all three of you have talked about so much, a lot of social aspects of being outdoors. And I don't know that we really think about social skills and emotional intelligence as connecting with the outdoors. That's certainly not one of the first things I think about when I think about having a kid outside. Why do you think those social skills really blossom in an outdoor setting?
I think there's a lot more emotional regulation when they're fully immersed. They're able to process, like everyone's able to process their feelings and have a sense of clarity, and awareness, and a connection to everything around them.
Hmm. And because they are not sort of pushing everything down and forcing themselves to stay, to follow the rules.
Yeah, they're not being, there's some structure, but they're not being like told what to do, when to do. Like there's certain expectations, but there's also like room for freedom and exploration.
Mm-hmm. Adam, how have you seen kids change in that environment?
I really liked listening to what Kiana and Katie said. Kiana talked about something that's, I think, really important to me, which is that human beings will rise to the level of your expectations and come out of their shell and surprise you and really blossom. And I love that your program does that, Kiana, that those students are trusted and they build that efficacy and that sense of pride and then turn around and exhibit that because they had a higher level of trust because they were empowered by adults. And that goes really closely with what Katie said about, you know, trying not to just say no to kids and empower them. You know, I believe in you. And I trust you is a powerful statement, not just for kids, but for adults. Like, I trust you. I believe in you. I you know, I have to let go of some things with teachers and tell them the same thing because we're taking risks and doing things that public education doesn't always allow and that, you know, ultimately could, you know, backfire if things went wrong. But I trust my teachers and they do an amazing job. I don't have to look over their shoulder. I know that they're doing the same things Katie described with kids, you know, really setting those parameters and clear guidelines and taking risks safely. And I also really liked that everything, what I heard when I was listening to Katie, everything she framed, everything she said could be boiled down to another thing that's really important to me, which is asking questions instead of giving directions. Mm-hmm. If there's anything I've learned in, you know, 22 years of being an administrator, it's that people don't listen to your directions. And teachers know this too. Like if you tell somebody what to do or you tell them no, that's really ineffective with human beings. It is a very ineffective way to lead. And everything Katie said was framed as questions and asking questions, yeah. You know, and giving those options. Like, what do you think might happen if you do that? And how might you try that differently? And what might be the risks involved? And so that simple reframing with kids of asking them, empowering them, I trust you, I believe in you, and let me ask you a couple questions to prompt your own thinking, I think is just such a empowering and powerful approach for kids.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk, I had so many topics that we're not going to be able to cover today. I wanted to talk about why there aren't more of these programs and talk about accessibility and making sure as many kids are able to get into the programs as possible, but we're not going to be able to cover those. But related to that, If you are a parent where there isn't a program like this available, or you're not not able to participate in that program, I'm curious what your thoughts are in terms of what families can do to promote more outdoor time in general, more of that unstructured time. You know, is it helpful to hike together or to send your kid out to the backyard? What role does that play?
Yeah, absolutely. Just for parents to find more of those opportunities. And I know that can be hard. Again, I talked about serving underserved communities, and I know Kiana's program serves, you know, youth in villages that may not have those opportunities as well. So that can be really hard to get at. There are some things systemically we have to take responsibility in terms of offering. What I've found, which is really cool, is there are these pockets of homeschool or like forest school families all over Anchorage. There's these little unofficial cohorts and groups that are doing this, that are coordinating themselves on Facebook or whatever, or just in their neighborhoods and banding together to offer these opportunities. I'd like to, at some point, have the capacity to try to unite and coordinate these groups and get more of that out there. It is really hard to get at, and especially for underserved communities. I think the more we can do to promote it and do things like this and just share these opportunities, especially in underserved communities, I think it's just super important.
Mm-hmm. Katie, what would you say to families who aren't able to get into the programs but want to spend more time and get some of those benefits of outdoor play for their kids?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of barriers at times to being outdoors, but know that there are ways to break those barriers down, especially living here in Southeast Alaska. We live in the rainforest. Gear is expensive, but it's also necessary. But trying to tap into resources to borrow gear, there's gear lending libraries all over the state, both for like gear you wear and gear you use, right? You can rent skis and bikes and all the cool stuff. But trying to just get out, go for hikes, go fishing, use that let them philosophy. I think one of the really cool things about outdoor activities when you're doing them with other people as well is the number of different side-by-side activities that you can do with someone. And this is how we tap into the social part of outdoor programming as well, the benefits, because kids and people open up when they don't have to look you right in the face. And so if you're standing on the shore fishing, boy, you can learn so much about your kid just out there fly fishing, casting a line. Tell me about your day. Open up. Like, you don't even have to ask hard questions. They will open up to you. Some of the most meaningful conversations and connections and relationship building I've gotten to do are just on the walk going to the place we're going, because it's way less intimidating. And like, what a gift as a parent or a guardian to know that you can just go and like watch the ducks down at the local park, sit beside your kid and have a really meaningful conversation that doesn't feel super scary. Mm-hmm. I think that's my thing. Just get out. Just go do it. Don't let things stop you.
Kiana, what if you have a kid who is not super excited to get outside?
Do you
force them? Even if they're not on their screen, say they're just like sitting on the couch petting the cat and you want them to go outside.
Force doesn't work. Force doesn't work. I try to redirect, give kids the opportunity to maybe see the fun in mm-hmm. the activity and yeah.
It sounds like reaching the end of our show. That is our out cue music. Thank you both so much for being here. Katie, thanks for joining us on the phone. And I hear that we have a bunch of Scoggies. Those are your Kinderscog kids listening in on their safety yes. radio out in the woods right now. So hello, Scoggies. Thanks for joining us today. And you can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. You can send emails letting us know your thoughts to line1@alaskapublic.org.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.